A bloody weekend in Jacksonville puts the city back in that unwelcome international spotlight. And what a week in Florida politics as Duval County helps Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum over the top to become the state's Democratic nominee for governor. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening out there. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, what a busy week in the news. We're going to break it all down for you with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line right now. Join us at 549-2937. Then later, one of the stars of HBO's hit show, Ballers, in studio this morning. A talk with actor and comedian London Brown later on this morning. All of that ahead this hour. But first, it's Friday. You know what that means. Time for our weekly media roundtable. And they're a little tired, but still working after a very busy news week as we welcome David Bauerlein, reporter for the Florida Times Union. Hey, David.
Good morning, Melissa.
Our own regular contributor, Charles Griggs, is here.
Good morning, Melissa.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
And local radio host, Angela Spears.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have all of you here. And my gosh, where do we begin with this week? Later in the hour, we'll talk about Andrew Gillum's upset win in the Florida primary and how Duval played a big role in that. And those controversial comments afterwards by his Republican opponent, Ron DeSantis. That's later. But first this hour, city fire inspectors are blaming a restaurant at the Jacksonville Landing for Sunday's mass shooting. Yeah, fire inspectors say Chicago Pizza's game room was not part of a city-approved floor plan, so it was not permitted to hold the video game tournament that the shooter was competing in Sunday. This according to their Wednesday fire code violation report. Two people in town for that Madden video game tournament died when 24-year-old David Katz, who had a history of mental illness, opened fire at the event and then killed himself. Lots of discussion about this. And as we talk about this latest news, we want your calls. What's your reaction to the city blaming the restaurant for this shooting? Keep in mind that Mr. Katz had a long history of mental illness, but was also able to legally buy two handguns and extra ammunition. We want your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Send your tweets to @MelissaInJax, or let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page. Charles Griggs, let's start with you. The fire inspectors say that the building layout may have had something to do with the tragedy in the sense that supposedly people couldn't get out maybe as quickly as they would have liked to. So the city fingering the restaurant here and also the game bar, the Good Luck Have Fun game bar. Your thoughts.
So what we know about how this occurred is that the shooter was actually taking aim at certain players. So I don't know if that logic holds up here. If he planned on shooting someone, you could use that same logic with the fact that he was allowed to purchase a gun. If he hadn't been allowed to purchase a gun, then he would have been able to shoot someone. So if the facility had been laid out like this, like the floor plan had wanted it to, then I don't think that would have left opportunity for him to be avoided, for this shooting to be avoided. It goes back to purpose, the intent. And if someone wants to use their gun, they're going to use their gun, whether or not they're or look at the floor plan and say, hey, this isn't laid out the way I want it to be laid out, or it's not a safe environment, so forth. But if we go back, you can use that same logic for if he wasn't allowed to have a gun, bring a gun into the facility or purchase a gun, then the shooting would not have occurred.
The Chicago Pizza owner issued a statement, David Bauerlein, to the Florida Times Union saying that the cease and desist notice and citations about this were a surprise to them. And so this seems to have caught the establishment off guard.
Well, absolutely. And I don't know if that means that they didn't realize they had to do some of the steps that they were supposed to do in terms of modifying the layout of the restaurant, or if it was a case where they chose not to do that in terms of getting permission from the city. It's a very complicated deal with all the different agencies that are involved in regulating these restaurant establishments.
Angela Spears, what about the fact that multiple city agencies, you know, they have to review any changes to a public facility like this? We're continuing to learn more. At the same time, some have questioned why wasn't there more security in an event like this? Others have pointed out the fact that David Katz had a long-standing history of mental health problems. They feel the problem is that someone with that history should not have easy access to weapons.
Let's go with the security issue. That's one thing that people, I think, are wondering. If the NFL, the gaming company, NFL Madden Gaming, whoever was hosting it, they didn't think about security when you had thousands of dollars on the line. The restaurant hosting it as well didn't have security. That's the one question I keep hearing is, why was there no security? Why wasn't that hired? Is that a requirement for them to have?
And would it have made a difference anyway?
Who knows? Because you're right. It goes back to then the other question that you have of, why was this young man allowed to have a gun? Why did he bring it in there? There was no way for people to, there were no machines, there were no wands to see who's going in and out of the restaurant to have guns. If there's something in place that the tournament had in place when it comes to weapons, so many questions. And as David mentioned, it's complicated.
And what does it say about our society now that even a video game tournament, you have to think through these things? And for a business, Tim Gibbons, our business editor, if you're going to be hosting an event like this, this is the new reality, very sadly.
I think that's exactly the point. The idea that, you know, 20 years ago you have a video game tournament, you don't have security because, you know, it's not a world in which mass shootings happen routinely. But yeah, now we're at a point where it makes sense to say, why didn't they think to have more security? Because that's the world we live in now. But you can understand how someone who, I don't know, if they've never gone through a tragedy like this, they don't think about the fact that, yeah, they need to have that. To go back to the fire code thing for a second, though, I find it interesting the wording on that statement of, you know, if they had followed the law and didn't have this gaming room set up, the shooting wouldn't have happened, is a true statement, as in, well, yes, if they didn't have a tournament there, the shooting wouldn't have happened. Sure, but it's kind of weird to me to actually try to link the code violation with the shooting. If this had been a fire and people, you know, the fire happened because they have extension cords instead of having proper wiring, then it makes sense to me to say that the code violation led to the tragedy.
And but I think also,
it's a weird, you know, connection to make.
And I agree also with Tim on that. The statement itself, if you read it to the end, it says that if the tournament had not been at the landing, the shooting wouldn't have happened at the landing. They don't say it wouldn't have been happened. That, you know, the venue was not the reason for the shooting, as Charles said. And so I don't even understand quite
right,
why.
If there had been a hurricane and the tournament had been canceled, there wouldn't have been a shooting. Well, yeah. Cool. I mean,
it makes sense.
No.
But it also, you know, this gaming community is a small fraternity. I mean, if they pretty much know each other, they, you know, almost immediately after the shooting occurred, you know, some of the gamers were identifying a guy who actually committed the crime. And so they were, you know, not embarrassed, but angry at the fact that this had infiltrated their space, feeling that this was their safe space to do what they do. And so now you have to look at almost, you know, everything, every event, every gathering for the same type incident, you know, that you want to prevent from happening. And they almost felt like it wasn't fair for this to happen to them because they felt like they operated in the same space.
And that goes back to the security question. We're not talking about a huge number of people. It was, you know, a couple dozen people there basically playing. Now, you know, as Angela pointed out, you have a lot of money on the line, stress is running high, and in today's world that, you know, you can expect that sort of thing. But, you know, I've been to birthday parties that have a crowd this size. And at some point you start saying, like, do you literally have to have armed law enforcement at every gathering, you know, over five people?
It's sad that could be the situation of where we are in this day and time of when you're having that event, if you're having something, that these are things that you have to question, Melissa, all the time.
After businesses have seen what happened to Chicago Pizza, David Barreline, the TU, reporting that the cease and desist for them means before they can reopen, they have to take corrective measures. They have to remove the gaming equipment, clear out obstructions to the exits. A business watching this unfold might say, well, I just don't think I'm going to host any events at my business after what happened. You know, that there's a certainly a chilling effect that you could imagine would occur with another business that might be thinking about hosting something beyond normal business, normal patrons coming in.
Right. You expose yourself to a large amount of legal risk in terms of things that are in some ways beyond your control. And taking the point of the whole layout of the restaurant, maybe that's something that comes out of it. Right now, if you do something, they're looking at, okay, if there's a fire, can people exit? How do they get out of danger? Maybe we're reaching a point now where when there's a layout for a building business, people are going to be asking at the regulatory level, okay, if someone walks in with a gun and starts firing, how do people get out? What's your evacuation plan? Where can they seek refuge? And it could be that we're going to have this become sort of a new normal in terms of how these types of decisions are made. And it could be that some businesses, aside from the regulations, they have these events, they're going to have an action plan in place where they know if someone walks in, what's going to happen? How are people going to get out? And they really probably should if they're going to have these events so that people can flee in an emergency.
And I don't know if all of you know this, but this Madden tournament originally wanted to have their event here at WJCT. And they were not they were not able to because the Jaguars game was going on at the same time. And for many years now, our WJCT parking lot has been a place for people who tailgate at the football games to come and have fun, use our facilities. So that tournament almost took place here in this building.
That actually points up the point I think that we're all kind of making of the, I'm pretty sure that you would not have, you know, not you, you wouldn't have been charged, I assume, but the idea that I wouldn't expect WJCT to sit there and go, okay, how many armed guards do we need? Because, you know, a couple dozen people want to show up and play video games. That's not the way that we think normally.
I mean, that's the new normal.
And let's go to some calls on this jammed lines this morning with our Friday roundtable. Stanley is on the north side. Hi, Stanley. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
All right. Thanks. Thank you for calling in. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning to everybody. My concern is we talking about everything but what we need to be talking about, the violence in America, period. It's been going on since Christopher Columbus arrived in the West Indies. And we won't talk about, we have a social problem in America. We talking about everything under the sun but what really matters. And I'm appalled by that. That show the leadership in this country don't care. You got two class of people, the haves and the have-nots. And long as it's happening to the have-nots, the people in leadership is not concerned. For them to give that little bit of money to the African, well, mainly to the African-American community, because that's the only people in the meeting, is appalling to me. The leadership in Jacksonville need to be, I don't know really what need to be done to them, but It's a crying shame that we continue talking about the same narrative about what we need to be doing instead of addressing the main issue.
All right. Thanks, Stanley. And I hear your point. And you're right. And, you know, I would say we have talked about the root causes of this on this program a lot. At the same time, let's talk for a second about the fact that at the city council meeting the other night, a group of activists actually stormed out because they became so frustrated with city council over what they saw was a poor response.
They were kicked out.
They were actually kicked out. But this frustration over the city's response to not just the shooting at the landing, which was from someone who came here from Baltimore, but also the fatal shooting at Raines High School during a football game. And just this endless drumbeat that we have in Jacksonville of gun violence and gun-related homicides. It's, you know,
this is the shooting at the landing galvanized national attention because it's, you know, so because it was at an event and all of that. But that's not really Jacksonville's violence problem. It's all the other shootings that happen, the you know, innocent lives cut short. That's a homegrown thing. That isn't somebody coming from outside shooting people. It's root causes that are part of our city's fabric that we have to deal with.
And the city has to get better at. And I'm not talking about just the administration. I'm talking about the city as a whole has to get better at addressing root causes. We don't really invest in prevention to the level where it would pay off in the long run.
And what do you think about the new Kids Hope Alliance, you know, sort of supplanting the Jacksonville Journey? guys, to get at the root causes of family breakdown, youth unemployment, poverty, kids getting into trouble. Is the Kids Hope Alliance going to be able to address this?
Well, go ahead, Angela.
I was going to say, let's hope so. But remember, there are many other groups, too, that are doing wonderful things that are out there. They're in the grassroots. They're there working. Charles, you know this firsthand. They're out there working firsthand with our young people. They're out there working with parents. So I think it's going to take all of us more than just that one agency to do it. And I think money needs to be funneled to other people who are doing these great things, who are there working, because some of it starts with parenting as well. There's so many different parenting classes that are out there. There are things for our children, and it's about getting them involved and getting them active as well.
Kids Hope Alliance is the city's effort at dealing with the problems within the young people in our community, and to make sure that we address those root cause problems.
There's a 16-year-old currently charged with murder right now.
That's right.
Happened at Rains.
And that 16-year-old, we were talking earlier about the shooter at the Landing who had documented mental problems. If you're a 16-year-old and you decide to pull out a gun, you probably have mental problems as well. Okay, so that's the conversation that's not being had in the community, and I think a lot of people understand that. But I don't think it's fair to pin all of the hopes on one organization or one entity. Hopefully what will happen is, and I think what I've heard from folks at KHA, is that they would be working to collaborate with other people in the community to do better things.
And let's go to Jennifer on the north side now. Hi, Jennifer. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have, 3 points. One, mental health. I just find it interesting that when a shooter is Caucasian, that their mental health, their troubled past, things like that are factored in and giving them a humanity in the image of the media. But when they're not of Caucasian descent, nefarious things are brought up about their past, and they're painted in a different brush. The second point is bullet control. Chris Rock, he's a comedian, but I think he hit the nail on the head when he discussed how if bullets were a certain price, people would be very careful about how they shoot. They talk about gun control. I would like to talk about bullet control. The third point is about the permit on the business. And a person on the panel stated how that necessarily didn't lead to the shooting. I agree. However, you have to consider the aftermath of the shooting. When someone is shooting in the room, there's panic. There's people running. There are many people injured trying to escape the room. If it wasn't permitted, do we know how many exits there are? Was there enough space for the people and the victims to escape? That has to be considered as well. And a business has to be liable for things like that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for all of that.
Just that last point. Having looked at the paperwork, two people were injured in the stampede. It didn't look like the business was cited for a fire exit issue, although the inspector, to be fair, wasn't able to actually get inside the building. So, that could be something that comes up later. But the issue seems to be more that it was not a use that was on their plan. Remember, this is in a restaurant, so it's not like somebody set up a gaming situation in someone's house or something that didn't have proper exits. If Chicago Pizza just had somebody come in and shoot, it would have. It's a restaurant. It's set up to have people in a restaurant.
Yeah, and lots of emails and tweets about this. Mike emails the show. No, no, no. We are not going to lay blame on the game room. Any more than blaming EA for making a Madden game or football for being a sport people want to play. We should also not blame the tool used to kill. There is no one to blame, says Mike, but the man who lost control of himself. And then Victor tweets the show talking about the cease and desist order. He says, that's trivial. A remarkably unstable young man legally purchased a firearm despite a plethora of red flags. Our system is flawed, and the way people obtain guns needs to change. It's remarkable to point out that just a month or so before this mass shooting at the Landing, the high school graduates from Parkland, Florida, who've been pressing for gun control in the state, were at the Jacksonville Landing holding a rally and a voter registration drive on this very issue. David Bauerlein.
Well, that makes it's going to be a huge issue in the state campaign, that's for sure. It's becoming more and more of a political issue Absolutely. And I think it's going to become more and more of an issue in city politics as well, even more so than it has been.
Let's take one more call on this, and then we'll move on. It's Gilbert on the South Side. Hi, Gilbert. Good morning.
Yeah, well, good morning. I just wanted to say, as far as the shooting is concerned and the talk about the permit, I mean, it is so illogical. There's absolutely nothing connected with the permit and the shooting. What we're talking about is what we need gun control. That's number one. But this lack of logic that seems to be going on, it's like seeing a rabbit in a rainbow and somehow trying to connect the two. What we need is to get more control over guns, because guns kill people. And all of this foolishness about people who are mentally ill, any person that is suicidal can kill anyone. That's what happens in most of these things. That's what happened in the gun shooting before. The fact that they could get their hands on a gun just meant they could kill more people than they could with a knife or with by hand. It's just we really need to start focusing on things that really make some sense in America. Gun control is one of them. The other thing, too, is, and this I'm going to be brief about this, is that when we have a democratic capitalist society, democracies are bottom-up. Capitalism is top-down. So you're always going to have a certain amount of frustration there, a certain amount of problems, because the two systems don't work. And now we're seeing with Bernie Sanders talking about how our government is top-down. We've got Trump, who absolutely knows nothing, running things, and we've got the John Birch Society that's still out there that people don't seem to realize has been trying to impact government from the from 1958.
Well, Gilbert, I'm going to jump in and just say that I appreciate you talking about all this, because we want to pivot now into some politics. And I appreciate your points on all of that, because also making headlines this week, man, what a wild primary.
Wow.
That came to a stunning conclusion in Florida Tuesday night with a major upset shocking the political world. North Florida was key, by the way, in delivering the Democratic nomination for governor to Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum Tuesday. Gillum racked up enormous margins in the state's most African-American counties, especially Duval. Duval, critical to Gillum's success. Now, he won only 19 counties, but he got his best vote margin here in Duval, where he earned a solid majority. So now the contest is set, the most progressive candidate in the field against the most conservative. The Republican nominee for governor, Congressman Ron DeSantis, easily won his primary, but he became engulfed in a media firestorm on the first day of the general campaign after remarks he made about Andrew Gillum on Fox News that his critics are calling racist. Let's listen to the full exchange and then we'll discuss.
Well, look, I mean, this is Florida elections are always competitive. And, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. He is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And, you know, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But I mean, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida.
Okay, it's 549-2937 as we talk about this. Ron DeSantis, after that blew up into controversy, has since said that it's ridiculous to say that anything he told Fox had anything to do with race, that he was talking simply about the future direction of Florida.
Okay, so Fox News actually, when he did that, the host basically apologized. Shoot. You know,
she did.
There's a certain amount of it, when you lose Fox News, you know, you've lost the nation, sort of thing. If a Fox News host looks at that and says that's a dog whistle,
I think that's people who have dog whistles.
And for those that don't know what a dog whistle is, the firestorm of criticism about these remarks that Congressman DeSantis made, calling an African-American articulate, is seen as insulting. The word socialism, the monkey it up, and even using the phrase Democrat rather than Democratic, this was all... critics of DeSantis would say, coded to appeal to far-right primary Republican voters. At the same time, let me just point out, I'm getting emails about this. One listener emails the show to say, there was a time when President Obama criticized Republicans in a public forum saying, we don't want to monkey around with their way of doing things.
But that's the phrase. Monkey around is the phrase. Monkey it up's not a phrase. No one says monkey it up. They say monkey around.
And what about the term of using he performed better? Like this is some performance, you know? It kind of goes back to his, you know, DeSantis's mentor of being a performance, that everything is a stage, right? That everything is about entertainment. No, this is a man who's trying to govern and who wants to govern the state. So all of that kind of plays around. And as Tim said, you're right. No one says monkey it up. Why would you even say that in this day and age?
Well, look, I'm looking forward to getting into the actual campaign, because what Gillum has done has been effective at getting to all of the corners of the state and making his message known on the least amount of money. And
what a come from behind victory.
It was
really
it was
remarkable.
He was nowhere near the top in any polls.
Not in a single poll. And at the bottom of fundraising.
In the bottom of fundraising.
He truly connected with voters.
And I remember
at the end.
I remember when they were trying to get him to get out of the race, but he kept pressing on and kept performing. And as we heard, Melissa, when we were doing the show on Tuesday evening, we had people who voted for Andrew Gillum the day on election day based upon his performance in debates, which they were, you know, early on, people were trying to hold him out of the debates. So
he performed well in the televised debates, and he truly turned out African-American voters, David Bauerlein, particularly here in Duval County. He ran up the margins heavily in Duval, and that was key to helping him narrowly beat Gwen Graham in this primary.
Right. And, you know, he showed up, I'll just go back on a more statewide level. The NAACP had an event where they invited all the gubernatorial candidates, and Andrew Gillum was the only one who came. So there were some photos of a table with a bunch of chairs. He's the only one there. I don't think that's a mistake that candidates are going to make in the future in terms of reaching out to all parts of the Democratic electorate. And in Duval County, yes, he was a huge force in Duval County. There was a huge turnout of Democrats, and African-Americans make up a huge portion of the Democratic Party here, and he really rolled. Where he won big, and Duval County was a textbook case of that.
He won big South Florida counties against these incredibly well-funded South Florida guys.
It was a lot of grassroots.
Philip Levine, Jeff Green, the guys that are from down there, and spent millions of their own money. So truly remarkable, and now this incredible battle is set between the most progressive candidate you could imagine and the most conservative candidate you could imagine. A battle for the state's soul. Which vision will the voters choose? It's going to be fascinating on any issue you care to name. Education, gun safety, which we were just talking about, how taxation, any issue you care to name, these two could not be further apart.
Well, it's interesting when you say the battle for the state's soul. There's also a interesting thing I noticed looking at the electoral return map that, Duval County, Northeast Florida, went heavily in the Democratic primary for Gillum and went heavily for DeSantis.
That's right. Primary.
That really, when you think of some of the issues facing Jacksonville, were a microcosm of people who support the most liberal candidate and people who support the most conservative candidate. And it is an interesting thing.
And striking to see all the votes in Duval going for DeSantis, despite the fact that the local Republican elite really liked Adam Putnam, I think we need to point out. But the rank and file voters did not go for Putnam.
The political elite liked Putnam, in general. And
yeah.
What do political elites know anymore?
Yeah. Keith in Riverside. Hi, Keith. Good morning.
Good morning. I think Ron DeSantis is just following what I like to call Donald Trump's SSS strategy, which is a Southern strategy on steroids. To call someone an articulate performing monkey is sending not just a dog whistle, it's a bullhorn. It's saying, I'm with Trump. I hate the right people, and you can count on me to do what, you know, what it is you expect to do. It is not, it is very clear that he's trying to send a racial signal. And as a former naval officer, he should know better than to use language like that. And he does. I mean, that was very intentional what he said. And his goal is to set up a racial dynamic. You can vote for the Trump guy, the guy that is very clearly a racist, or you can vote for the performing monkey. You choose. That's what I think is happening. He doesn't have to say anything more. He's already established his credentials in that area.
Thanks for the call, Keith. And whether you agree with Keith or not, race is going to be a huge factor in this contest.
And as we know, this race will definitely set the stage for what's going to come in 2020 when it comes time for the presidential election. Yeah. So we all know that. And it's just interesting that Florida, we are going to be at the center. Yeah. Here we are again. We're going to be at the center
of
everyone.
It's so quiet and serene here all the time.
Melissa, you're right. Race is going to be a major part of this race, whether we like it or not. And it's something we as the media that we're going to have to talk about.
That's right.
And I know race is something that a lot of times people shy away from, but it's something that's going to have to come out, because every time you mention Gillum, he could be the first black governor, you know, instead of just saying he could be this governor, right? Because you're not saying that Ron DeSantis could be, I don't know, you know, what's his descent. I don't know. You know, just we're not saying he's a white governor. You know, we're not putting race with his name. So race is definitely going to be a big part of it.
People turned out in 2008. African Americans turned out in 2008 for Barack Obama, as well as in 2012. So
can Gillum rebuild that coalition? I think is the question. And can DeSantis turn out his coalition? The Republican turnout in Florida just edged the Democratic in the primary. Both parties turned out. So
I think the independents are going to be key here, and just how much people are going to resist the president's agenda and his antics.
Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl.
Hi. Good morning. Yeah, I agree with the previous caller that all DeSantis is trying to do is unite the white, and either the Republicans are going to vote for Americans or they're going to vote for the Ku Klux Klan, and that's the choice that the Republicans have. Either it's the white is right and we don't care, or you're going to vote for policies and programs that are good for Florida, our education, our environment, you know, and all of those things. But, you know, I don't think he's going to speak about any of those things. He's interested in doing exactly what Donald Trump is. Unite the white. Everybody else is the enemy. And it's a sad for the Republican Party.
I appreciate the call, Daryl, but let's talk about some of the issues. Andrew Gillum is calling for the most progressive platform I think any candidate for governor in this state has probably ever called for in the modern era. Medicare for all, higher taxes on wealthier Floridians to pay for education, abolishing or reforming ICE. These are all the positions that the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party has settled on. Ron DeSantis is campaigning basically on a continuation of Rick Scott's policies. Low taxation, keeping basically the education system and the way it's funded in place. Aggressive push to recruit corporate headquarters here to Florida. The only issue that you see that I've seen so far, DeSantis diverging a little bit from the party line on, is how to deal with the toxic algae blooms that are bedeviling the state. And he's made a point of mentioning that he hasn't taken donations from Big Sugar, which hurt his opponent, Adam Putnam. So on the issues, you know, we will learn more about their positions, and they will debate together, and we will have a chance to see their visions, their competing visions for Florida. And it's important that people know where they are on the issues.
Well, one of the issues they can handle right away is Medicaid expansion through the Affordable Care Act. And that's the thing that's been left on the table for years and has caused problems for a lot of people who are in that donut hole. And Andrew Gillum is saying that's going to be the top of his ticket, one of the things he wants to resolve early. And of course, Ron DeSantis is going to stick with the dismantling of that. And Floridians are going to have to decide whether or not they want to buy into the Affordable Care Act or go ahead and leave it the way it is.
Right. I think some of the issues that have really separated them are federal issues. And I think the dynamic we're going to see a lot is, say, on Gillum's part, he may say, I support Medicare for all, But, you know, that's not something that Florida can do on its own. So that's a way to sort of, on the one hand, appeal to the progressive wing of the party. On the other hand, maybe get to some of those independents to say, yeah, okay, you may be concerned about it, but that's really not where my focus is going to be as governor. And I think the same thing will happen to some extent on some of the positions that DeSantis takes. The real issues are the ones that I think Charles mentioned, things like, do you raise corporate taxes mm-hmm. to fund public education?
Right.
Do you expand the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, to Florida, which has been held up for years in Florida? How do you go about on the environment in terms of regulations? Those are the real key issues. And I think even on those issues, there's going to be a wide gap. There will be a real choice election.
Right. Does it really matter if the governor of Florida wants to abolish ICE or not? I mean, it's a positioning thing more than an actual, you know, thing that
Rick Scott. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm interested, you know, as Business Journal editor, to see when you talk about him as of DeSantis as a continuation of Rick Scott. Scott, whatever you think of his policies, was absolutely a champion of bringing businesses to Florida. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out. There's been the fight in the statewide level about what type of incentives should we have? How do we go about attracting businesses? And I know the business community very much was looking for a Putnam victory because it's what they're more comfortable with. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
And when they talk about business and the economy, you're going to hear two starkly different narratives. DeSantis will be saying, everything is puppies and rainbows in Florida. Let's keep it going. Gillum's going to say, we have millions of people in this state who have to work two jobs just to get by, and they're all crowded into tiny apartments. They can't afford their housing. You're going to hear two very different narratives. Yeah. So Peter in St. Augustine. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a wonderful show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just two quick points. I'm a white guy, transported from New York recently. I'm all in for Mr. Gillum. I think he's a wonderful candidate. I'm all in for his policies and things he wants to institute in if he's elected. I think it's just great. However, I disagree with the way he reacted about the DeSantis comment. I have used that expression myself. I won't use it anymore. Obviously, it strikes a nerve with African Americans, so that I won't use that anymore. But I think there's an opportunity for Mr. Gillum to, for instance, make a choice when he's confronted with that. There's going to be plenty of time for the scorched earth policy in his competition with Mr. DeSantis for the governorship. I think he has to start appealing. He has an agenda that is very liberal. He has to get a lot of people on his side to vote for him. And I can guarantee you, as a northerner, from what I see in Florida, he has already lost a significant part of the population just because he's a black man. And I don't know why, for instance, the conversation isn't in his campaign to strategize against someone like Mr. DeSantis, who obviously is a smart guy. I didn't hear Mr. DeSantis say he was an articulate black man. I heard him say he's an articulate spokesman for his agenda, which means that the agenda is going to be articulated beautifully by Mr. Gillum, which he does. And it's a threat to Mr. DeSantis's governorship. So anyway, thanks again. I just wanted to make those comments.
Okay, thanks for that. You know, the word articulate, let's talk about the fact that Ron DeSantis isn't the first politician to get in trouble for describing a prominent African-American as articulate. And there's a long history that we could talk about. We don't have a lot of time to get into this, but there's a reason why that's offensive to African Americans. I remember Joe Biden taking heat when he referred to Barack Obama as articulate some years ago. It's a backhanded compliment that's actually falls on the ears. Slur.
And now they have a bromance, right? So it is, and I think the caller makes some great points. What people don't understand about Andrew Gillum is that he's been a politician since he's been in college. And this is, you know, how to navigate all of this is not new to him. And, you know, he can just from the clapback that he gave Donald Trump from his tweet about Ron DeSantis being a better candidate in Florida's not, you know, looking for someone like Andrew Gillum. I mean, he basically said, hey, you know, bring it. We don't want, you know, you don't want any of this, because he feels like he's a uniter instead of a divider. Now, how that plays out in the end is going to be, this remains to be seen. But I think what his campaign will end up trying to do is to position DeSantis folks as dividers and people who are like many Trump supporters, and use that as a way to unite the state. That's what his hope is to be.
And in any normal cycle, this would be an election that's just about Florida. But now so much of it's going to be driven by what's going on with the president, investigations into corruption at the White House. That's going to hang over this whole thing.
Well, because, you know, because DeSantis, you saw the commercial that he had with his children saying, build that while he's kind of made it, you know, build the wall and reading the story to his baby. And he's made it about that because that's his mentor. And he's telling us, this is who I look up to, and this is what I'm going to be like, and this is what Florida is going to be like.
Even the Gillum response to the whole controversy over the monkeyed up was to say, this is the kind of thing that Donald Trump would say.
Yeah.
It's an effective response from the standpoint of energizing his supporters and trying to appeal to an independent who don't like the way the rhetoric that comes out of the Trump White House.
DeSantis had a very canny strategy of, you know, basing it around appearances on Fox News on a national platform that's also reaching the Republican primary, you know, base voters.
Helps with fundraising too.
Yeah.
Let's take one more call on this. It's Herman on the South Side. Hi, Herman. Go ahead.
Good morning, Dr. Ross. Moving real fast here.
You keep promoting me. Are you going to pay for my grad school? Because that would be nice. Go ahead, Herman.
We have to do it. Who would be an asset or liability in their form of lieutenant governor for both of these candidates? And does it now put the Republican Party in a position they have to choose either a Hispanic or black or female in order to win this thing?
Okay, thanks for that. Who will these two pick for their LGs? And will Gillum pick, say, Gwen Graham as his running mate? Who will Ron DeSantis pick?
I've been talking with people about this in that circle, and most people say that Gillum needs to pick someone from South Florida, a moderate male from South Florida. So who knows? And the same thing I've heard on the other side, DeSantis probably needs to pick someone.
Does he need to pick someone of color or a woman to...
Someone from South Florida.
Or someone from South Florida. We'll have to see, won't we?
I mean,
it'll be interesting.
Lieutenant governor, is this for election purposes only? Once the election is over, that job is nothing. You know,
it's a figurehead position.
And finally, this hour, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida, the Miracle Whip edition. Yes, only in Florida does a town change its name from Mayo to Miracle Whip. Yeah, it's a town in the panhandle. About 1,500 people live there. It's all a big joke. They just did it for like a week or so. But videographers from Miracle Whip showed up to get the reaction of the locals. Mayo is located halfway between Gainesville and Tallahassee. And they're getting $25,000 for the name change. The money will be used for city beautification.
Other cities have to try to catch up.
that's a good one.
Thanks, Tim Gibbons, Angela Spears, David Barreline, and Charles Griggs. In a moment, London Brown, star of HBO's Ballers.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. A company's cell phone policy can protect your employees and your bottom line. Our distracted driving presentation for the workforce can help.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington reminds you to act fast, whether it's water, mold, or fire damage. ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington, 721-2230, or servprojacksonvillesouth.com, like it never even happened.
The UK says it's gonna make a deal with the EU before Brexit. Businesses in Britain? Oh, they are not so confident.
If there is no transition deal, there will be very, very severe disruption to supply chains.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Trade after Brexit. How is that gonna work? That's next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Death hasn't changed. It's still as certain as taxes. But the way Americans deal with death has. I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, we'll talk about how technology has played a role in disrupting traditional funeral practices. Plus, neuroscientist Eric Kandale talks about what dementia, schizophrenia, and other disorders reveal about the complex workings of the human brain. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The White House needs a new attorney, or two.
Jeff Sessions is now a dead man walking because the Republican Party will never do anything to stop Donald Trump.
Also this week, the nation honors two American heroes. Florida delivers a political punch, and is Bob Costas done talking sports? The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A. Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, he's one of the stars of the hit HBO series Ballers. Actor and comedian London Brown is in town over the Labor Day weekend for his stand-up comedy tour, The Hustle. You can catch him tonight and tomorrow night at the Jacksonville Comedy Club on Beach Boulevard. We've even got a ticket giveaway. Keep listening for that. London Brown, good morning. Thanks for stopping by.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's so good to have you. You've really made such an impact on Ballers with, you know, Dwayne Johnson and all the rest of the cast. You're sort of the guy that fans of the show love to hate as Reggie, right?
Yeah. You know, it kind of evolved into that. And I think that people are just, at least from season one, they found him very annoying, and so forth. So I think by season four, people were finally coming around to understanding some levels of Reggie.
And so how did you kind of develop the character and get into it?
I basically, as actors, it's our job to bring these characters to life. So with doing the show, after reading over it, you know, the script a few times, I started to find some nuances that I could really exaggerate and bring out, and which ultimately led to the development of Fat Reggie being the antagonist. And so I just, whatever they had on paper, I just amped it a little bit more to give Reggie some energy, because on a show like Ballers, there's a lot of talented actors with serious resumes. So I didn't want to get what we call lost in the sauce. So
and
I
didn't
just,
you kind of luck onto the show a little bit? I think I heard on ESPN, you really, just your moxie and your charm, you got cast on that show.
Really what it came down to was, initially Reggie was supposed to be on the show for only a couple episodes. And after the audition process, they decided to make him a lead. And so all I could really attribute that is to just God's favor, because I didn't, you know, I had no real, because according to paper, to the paperwork, I was only supposed to be showing up a couple times. So when preparedness meets opportunity,
yeah,
then, you know, hey, I was set. I was ready to roll.
You were ready to go.
I was ready.
And so people that come out to see you this weekend, they might have caught you on the show, but you also are doing this stand-up tour, The Hustle. So what are people going to get to enjoy when they come out to see you this weekend?
People are going to have a good time. First major shout out to my boy Brandon Lewis from Atlanta, who's in LA with me. But we've been on this road and we're just knocking out these cities, and people are going to get some honesty, some stuff about relationships, things about Brandon has some funny bits about just his experience with jail and different things and how he didn't go, but he did go. So, I mean, we cover a lot of different topics, the difference between black and white people culturally, the way we eat, the way we dress. We cover a lot working with Dwayne. So I think people, especially with all the things that's been going on.
You're going to spill a little tea on Dwayne?
Yes, I do. I do give you
Give us a little bit of what it's like?
Dwayne is an extremely cool guy. You know, Dwayne is so focused that you feel bad thinking about eating unhealthy. You get the guilties.
Yeah,
you know?
I can tell by looking at nothing but kale and lean protein
I think he eats like, he'll have a taco, but it'd be like a taco with like wheat tortilla and like cardboard cheese. Like he's healthy.
Yeah.
But he's cool. He's a really nice guy. So, you know, overall, people, like I said, with all the things that's happening down here, people need to come out, get their spirits right, need to laugh, have a good time, and,
oh, that is the
you know,
truth.
Release
that,
some stress.
Yeah, it's just been such a tough week here. And so, yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And let's do the ticket giveaway right now, because if you need some laughs and some fun this weekend, over the Labor Day holiday, here's your perfect opportunity. We have two pairs of tickets to give away to go see HBO star London Brown at the Comedy Club of Jacksonville. They are at 11,000 Beach Boulevard. Shows tonight and tomorrow night. Email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will select two winners at random. The unimpeachable Kevin Murchart will pick the two winners, and the two names will be at Will Call at Comedy Club this weekend for London Brown's show. And by the way, in addition to ballers and stand-up, he's even doing a photography book. So what a multi-talented guy you are.
I'm working on it, man. I'm working on it. Like, some of those proceeds from the book will go to helping feeding the homeless people. Because at the end of the day, people are people. It's not about these titles and fancy clothes and what have you. Who are we at our hearts? And that's what I care about.
Thanks so much for being here. Kudos on all the success.
Thank
you
kindly.
Thanks for coming to town.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Again, email us now, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, to win that pair of tickets to the show this Labor Day weekend. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Kevin Murchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A's up next with their Friday News Roundup. And don't forget to join us at 1 o'clock this afternoon for our new statewide call-in program, the Florida Roundup, bringing you into the discussion for the top stories around the state all week. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening to 89.9, and have a great, safe, and happy Labor Day weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.